Hey, Powerhouse, it's time to transform your legal career inside Powerhouse Elite. Created for the ambitious, forward-thinking female lawyer who is craving meaningful connections, career advancement, and empowering other women in the law. So let me tell you all the incredible value you'll be getting inside Powerhouse Elite, a luxury retreat at the Miraval Resort in Austin, Texas, September 27th through the 30th, monthly one-on-one coaching calls with me to specifically work on your goals and where you're going, access to a sisterhood like no other, connecting a network of inspiring, supportive women who share your values, dreams, and ambition. And also inside the Elite membership, you get a coaching call once a month with all of these incredible women in the Powerhouse Lawyers community. So if you're ready for more this year, join Powerhouse Elite. Grab one of the few remaining spots today by clicking the link in the show notes. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to transform your life and career with Powerhouse Elite.
If you don't ask, the answer will always be no, especially if you sit there quietly and just kind of like torture yourself with ideas instead of going out there and actually making it happen.
You are more than a lawyer. You are a powerhouse. Welcome to Powerhouse Lawyers. I'm your host, Erin Gerner, a former lawyer, wife, mom, entrepreneur, and coach. And I'm here to show you what's possible. So if you're ready, let's go. Hey, powerhouses, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I'm so excited to share my next guest with you, mostly because her story very much resonates with mine. And it's just another emphasis of when you actually finally take the time to take a step back from your busy life and law and your career and the hamster wheel that you have been on, when you actually take a step back to evaluate what your values and your priorities are, what you actually like and enjoy doing, and then making career moves and making life decisions from that place, I resonate so much with our next guest. We have a very similar story. She went to law school to get another 3 years. I did the exact same thing because I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. We liked school. So off we go to law school with no direction, just listening to, oh, law school sounds like a great idea. You'd be a good lawyer. Then we get into law school and it's like, oh, well, either you can be a litigator or you can go and be a transactional lawyer. Litigators are these kind of people. They're the extroverts or the people who like to talk. The transactional people look like this. So on you go, like down the marching hallway, just following along everybody else. And all of a sudden you are at a job and in a career and you turn around and you're like, what am I doing here? Like, what am I even doing? What does this mean? Do I even like this job? How did I get here? And it's not until you take the actual time and have honest conversations with yourself and ask yourself honest questions about what your values and priorities are and how you can actually align your life and career with those values and priorities. But until you do that exercise, you are going to continue on the hamster wheel and just feel like a cog in the system, right? Like, what? I have no purpose. I've worked my whole life and I don't feel fulfilled. That lack of fulfillment and that feeling of unalignment comes from being in a place of not being clear on what you actually want for your life. But you cannot start answering those questions until you get still, you start actually getting things on paper. You need a mentor. Community is a place where you can really, really find your groove again. If you are in a rut, I preach community all the time. If you have somehow forgotten who the hell you are and what a badass you are, put yourself in a room with women who are achieving, who are going where you want to go, and get yourself filled up, get yourself inspired and reminded of who you are and what God's plan is for your life. And it is not for you to sit at a job day after day and be miserable and feel totally unaligned. You have a choice today to take a full evaluation and an assessment of what your life looks like and feels like and start making different choices from that point today. If nothing changes, nothing changes. And my friend Adriana, who you're going to hear from next, is really the epitome of just continuing to put one foot in front of the other, never giving up, but always continuing to ask herself the right questions. So enjoy the show. Hey, powerhouses. I'm so excited to introduce you to our next guest. My dear friend, Adriana Paris, is on the show today. We met through LinkedIn. You guys know that that is my fun playground. We slide into the, I don't even think they call it the DMs on LinkedIn. I don't even know what they call it. Anyway, that's how we met. She's a champion of what I'm doing. I'm a champion of what she's doing. So let me introduce her to you guys. She is the Director of Attorney Development and Recruiting at Risman Law. She oversees hiring, training, and retention of talented and diverse lawyers who share her firm's values and visions. She has more than 10 years of experience as a civil litigator, working in-house with top law firms where she handled complex and high-stakes cases across various state industries and jurisdictions. She is also the author of Rising Lawyer, a practical guide for law students and junior associates who want to succeed in the legal profession. She's passionate about helping lawyers navigate the challenges and the opportunities of their career, which she does through her business, AM Paris Consulting. And she also has a 200-hour yoga teacher training and a host of other certifications because we are lawyers and we love a good certificate, don't we? How much wall space do we have? I love it. Adriana, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. New LinkedIn friend. I love making LinkedIn connections. Who would have thunk it? I'm very happy to be here.
Yes, absolutely. So if you've heard me say that, and or this is the first time you've heard me mention LinkedIn, you need to get over there and start networking with your fellow professionals on LinkedIn, because all intimidation aside, it is where I have made some really powerful connections with some really amazing women. So, and a host of them you hear on this podcast. So get after it, people. LinkedIn, where it's at. All right, Adriana. So take us back to the beginning. You know, you obviously are, you've done some law adjacent stuff. You've practiced law. So take us back through the beginning of your journey. Why did you go to law school and how have you come full circle in your position now?
Yeah. So I went to law school kind of on a whim. It wasn't this grand plan that I had. I was a junior in college in 2008 when the recession hit, and I was a political science major, and, you know, I had no real prospects of what to do after graduation. A lot of my friends were like, we're taking the LSAT so we can postpone having to find a job. We'll get 3 more years in school. It's going to be great. And I thought that sounded like a good idea. So I went to law school really just to get more time. And I think like many other lawyers, I was a good student. I enjoyed reading. I did well in school academically. That was academic success was something that I think I very much prize. And so the idea of going to law school was sort of just like a natural fit for me. And do you want me to tell you like what I was doing in law school or what next steps?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad you tell that story. I'm so glad you tell that story. Like I kind of went to law school on a whim because I mean, I just to get 3 more years to make a decision. And that's really what I did too. And for a lot of years, I was like, am I the only person that did that? Like, that seems like a really... and then knowing like on the other side of law school, what I actually did get myself into, I was like, oh, that's a really terrible reason. Like anyway, but there's a camp of us, you know, it's either you've wanted to be a lawyer since you were small, or you're like us who are like, well, I kind of need 3 more years to decide. I'm smart. I like school and I think I can do this lawyer thing. So, but anyway, I love that we resonate and we're on the same page about that. So tell us about your law school journey and then, you know, the beginning of your legal career and what that looked like for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, this whole like decision-making on a whim continued for me in law school because I didn't have a pre-planned idea of what I would do. I ended up in law school just sort of like, what am I going to do now, right? And a lot of the friends I went to law school with did have these plans. They wanted to be litigators or they wanted to do criminal defense or whatever. And I just didn't have any of that. And what I did, which part of the reason I ended up writing Rising Lawyer is because I hope that law students today are a little more thoughtful about what they want to do as opposed to me, which I was not thoughtful about it. I basically listened to all the external validations and external advice I received from people in choosing my career after law school. So I ended up working for a big law firm. I ended up in litigation. Why? Because my friends were like, you either do transactional or litigation. Those are your only two choices. That's the only two things you can do. And the people who go in litigation are people who are extroverted and people who are good writers and they like speaking and socializing. So you should do litigation. I mean, that literally is what happened to me in law school. And that's how I ended up in litigation, which saying it out loud is so wild to me that I would make a career decision based on what other people said to me and the advice I got from people who didn't know any better. They just heard that from someone else.
But you're not alone. Like, this is right. My story. This is like 95% of lawyers' stories. It's a narrative and we're just following along.
Right. Yeah. And I never stopped to ask myself, like, okay, Adriana, what are you good at? Like, what are the things that not only come easier to you than they do to other people, but things that you like doing? Like, why don't you take a step and just evaluate all the classes you're taking? Like, what classes do you like? What do you like about them? I literally never asked myself that. Like, my torts class was fine, and I ended up doing torts as my profession because that's what a lot of litigation is. But if you had asked me, hey, what exactly about this do you like? And how do you imagine this to be a profession? I couldn't give you an answer. I mean, I had no idea. Anyway, so I ended up in litigation. I ended up working for a big law firm. And it was fine. Like, that's the way I describe it to people. It was fine. I wasn't super enthusiastic about it. I wasn't miserable. I was somewhere in the middle where the work I did was somewhat interesting. And I think it did use some of my skills and some of my strengths. But on the grander scheme, I was like, what am I doing? Like, what is the purpose of everything I do? And by the end of like a few years of me working in, you know, private practice and litigation, I just felt like I was a cog in the wheel. And I had no real like impact on the cases I worked on, the clients. I was very much a replaceable peon in this grand scheme of litigation, which there's nothing wrong with that, especially starting out. But to me, I realized that that just was not the role that I wanted to play. That was not the career I wanted to have.
So what did you do from that point? So what did that look like and that feel like in your life? Because I know that many attorneys listening to this right now feel like a cog in the wheel and feel like, what am I doing? So talk to us about that mindset and what you ended up doing from that space.
Yeah. I wish I had, again, now looking back, you know, with a hindsight and a few years under my belt, what I would do today is not what I did back then. what I did, you know, again, I didn't do what I should have done in law school and what I should have done when I got to this kind of cross point in my life of, okay, take a breather, think about what do you want the next 5 years to look like? How can you today, like, basically sow the seeds to get that future that you want? Instead, I was like, I feel like if I went in-house, that would be better. I would have more impact. I would have a bigger role. So I went in-house as a fourth year associate, which I think it's more common now, but back, you know, this was whatever, nine years ago at this point, it was not super common. So I was hired, I was like 29 years old. I was hired as a director at this relatively large company. I was the youngest director by far. I ended up managing people, which I had never done before. And my boss was the general counsel of the entire company. The two of us were the only lawyers for the whole company. And so I ended up wearing a bunch of hats. I basically did whatever was needed to protect the company's legal interests. The job itself was miles more interesting than I had ever had that, you know, experience when I was working at a law firm, because it was much more varied. I had way more, again, I wore so many hats, I just did a lot more things. So from the perspective of my substantive work being in-house, it was much more interesting. But my boss was awful. He was just awful. He really was. And that was my lesson. And I say this to people today, you know, if you are listening to this podcast and you think that going in-house is like the holy grail. The one thing to keep in mind is when you are at a law firm, you usually work with several other partners unless you are at a very small law firm. So if you don't like a partner, you can sort of weasel your way from underneath them and go work with someone else or whatever. When you are in-house, for the most part, you are working with like one boss or possibly two people, you know, a VP of litigation, possibly the chief legal officer of the company. But you don't have many opportunities to basically make a lateral move. I mean, I couldn't just call up the marketing department at this company and be like, will you guys take me on as a somebody who has no marketing experience because I hate my boss? Like, that just doesn't happen. So that job ended up being, again, a very good lesson for me. And there are downsides to working in a law firm, but there are some upsides as well.
Awesome. Well, okay. So I actually really love that because I think that, you know, it's funny, we can look back in hindsight and say like, oh, you know, this is what Adriana version today would have done. But I think that that story resonates so much with people because that's my story. And I think that's a lot of lawyers' stories because we're just pressing forward to the next thing so often because we feel that internal push all the time to be succeeding.
Yes.
So we're never taking a beat to say like, does this job feel good? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. Is this the next move for me? Like, is this the next right move for me? And so that is the great thing about women like you and I who are telling these stories, who are on these podcasts. So if this is in your ear right now, like this is the seed that you need to maybe take that evaluation step, to take a minute, to take a beat, to see if what you're doing is aligned with your priorities and your values, asking yourself the hard questions and actually allowing yourself to answer them honestly. That is how you're going to be able to move into a career that feels fulfilling, into a career that you actually like. But you have to start asking yourself the questions. And that takes stopping and slowing down for a second and getting off the hamster wheel. So how was that experience?
And it's uncomfortable, right? It's uncomfortable to do that. And this is why like it's so much easier to be like, I'll just go find another job. Like, getting a new job is an easier sort of escape route than the real decision you have to make, which is, okay, instead of just looking out and trying to see what else is out there, like, what do I actually want? Like, ask yourself that question.
And those jobs are out there. We're so convinced that we have to go to the next thing because it's like this scarcity thing that we have to just control and cling on to the next. It is like, if I just go to another job, then I'll figure it out there. But it's really knowing that everything you want is available to you, but you have to stop and be able to know what it is to be able to ask for it.
Yes.
So after this very difficult transition, so I'm assuming this was a difficult transition for you. How long were you working with that boss? I've worked for like a demon boss before too. So
how long did you make it?
Not very long. And that was that. It's actually on another podcast that I did. I released with my old coach, and it was like hell with you, quit, like peace out, deuces. Yeah. And that's a 1 out of 10 recommend situation, but that's literally what I did, was like, see you later. Like just pulled the card and like walked out the door. My husband was like, that was probably, we needed to talk about that. But anyway, here we are all the years later, but talk to me about your transition.
Yeah. So I made it 2 years, which was awful. It was like 2 years too long. There was something happened at the company that was financially beneficial to me. And so I made myself sort of wait this thing out so that I could reap the rewards. I call it my like hazard pay because of what I, you know, went through. So I made it for 2 years. And funny enough, I went back to my initial firm, like the first firm I was at. They took me back. And I basically rolled back into exactly what I was doing before I left. I mean, it was like nothing had changed. Literally the same cases I had 2 years prior were still in the atmosphere lingering around, and I got those cases back. I mean, part of me was like, am I in some alternative universe where this other job didn't happen? Like, am I dreaming this? So that was pretty funny. But so I ended up going to my same firm, and frankly, I think I needed something that was like comfortable and something that I knew, because I felt like I had ventured out into the unknown and I got bit. And I was like, eek, I have to go back to safety. So that's essentially what I did, and just kind of picked back up where I left from. But, you know, it's one of those things that you can't fix. Like, you can't just go back to something that's familiar to you without having the same issues that you had before you left. So my same problems and concerns and these ideas of like, oh, I'm back to being a cog in a wheel in this grand litigation, I had the same exact feelings. So I stayed there a few more years. I got promoted to like senior counsel at the firm. So that was great. Like, from the outside, things were great, and I got positive reviews, and my work was great, and everything was good. And it was one of those things where people were like, what are you complaining about? Like, things are going well for you. You're doing well. You're good at this. Like, just keep doing it. Ride it until the sunset, until you retire. Isn't that such awful advice we give people?
It's horrible, but I am telling you that this is how lawyers operate. And it's so sad to me. It is like, it's like we're not allowed to choose. Do you know what I mean? I mean, from the outside, everything does look great. Everyone's like, what do you have to complain about? You've got this job, you're making multiple six figures, you're this, you're that, you've got the house, the husband, the kid, the car, the wife, and the thing. But you're like, I feel miserable inside, and I hate this. Like, it does. And it's not that I hate the law, right? It's not that I hate the law. It's not that I hate being a lawyer. It's that I've gotten myself into a situation where I am so unaligned in life and in business that I like hate it. Like, I can't even pinpoint what I hate, but I'm miserable, and people do not understand that. And there's not a place for us to voice that. There's not.
Right.
Who are you going to talk about that?
And again, when I was at my firm, like, who was I going to complain to this about? Like, the partners I worked with. And at one point I did. I was very close to one of the partners. And one day I walked in his office and I was like, don't you feel like this is bullshit? And he was like, what are you talking about? He's like, what, the case we're working on? I'm like, no, everything. And he's like, do you need to take some medication? Like, are you okay? But it's funny. I mean, there are so many lawyers out there who are truly miserable in their jobs. I wasn't miserable. Like, I never got to the point where I was like, I hate my life. I have to quit. This is the worst job I've ever had. It frankly was never that bad to me, but it was like this itch that I just kept. I was like, I still have this itch. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know how to describe it.
Itchy sweater.
It was like an itchy sweater feeling. That's how I felt exactly about my like career, you know? And sometimes I was like, is it like my personal life? Like, is there something else going on? But it wasn't. Plot twist. It was always a career. You know, I hadn't found a way to articulate like what it was that I was going through until right before the pandemic. So 2019, I ended up taking like 3 months off. I was like, I can't deal with anything anymore. I don't want to continue doing this. I don't want to frantically apply for another job because I did that and it didn't work out. So I just made myself sort of take time off. Is right on Christmas. It was like a perfect time to kind of quit right off into the sunset for just a little bit and think about what I wanted to do. And it was really hard to do that because I had no frame of reference. I, at that point, was not very active on LinkedIn. I didn't really know anybody else who had a law degree but was not a lawyer or was, you know, not practicing or doing something else. I had no community. I had nobody to be like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. What should I do? So I read a bunch of books. I read random ABA journal articles of people who had law degrees but stopped practicing just to try to get some ideas of what else I could do. And then the pandemic hit. I was like, uh-oh.
So what did that look like? So tell us about that. I feel like this is where things get exciting.
Yeah. Well, obviously it was scary because, you know, I was like, are we all going to lose our jobs? Like what, you know, what's going to happen? So I went back to my old firm again.
Adriana is like, it's like an old boyfriend. You just can't, can't give him up. We just keep going back.
I know. One of my friends said that. One of my friends literally said, this is like an old boyfriend that you just can't quit. And I was like, well, he can't quit me either.
we're sitting together. Back. Here we go.
We are. We're in a weird codependent situation. So I ended up going back to that firm, but because it was a pandemic, the courts were closed in Florida. There were no trials, no litigation. And so a lot of our firm, a bunch of us were litigators, were like, what should we do? So people were just sort of panicking, not making their hours, having all kinds of issues. And I decided to reach out to our chief administrating officer of the firm and say, look, one, I don't really enjoy this job anyway. Thanks for taking me back again. Two, clearly litigation is on hold because of the pandemic. What else can I do for the firm in maybe in an administrative role that is a little different from my very typical attorney job? And surprisingly, he was really responsive to that. So I ended up in this like hybrid role where I helped the firm with some of their like internal initiatives. I did some diversity, equity, and inclusion work. I did some sort of ESG type work, which I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's environmental social governance, basically just how a firm governs itself as a business and what choices do they make? What clients do they represent? Are they making any strides towards helping the environment? Are they taking on any social causes? Things that in the past, I think firms didn't really, they just stayed away from everything. And now they're becoming much more involved and much more expressive as businesses. So I was able to get involved with that. And it was a really great opportunity. And I remember when I started doing this, a bunch of my friends at the law firm were like, what? Like, how did you get to do this? Like, did they call you and ask you? And I'm like, no, I asked. Like, I literally just called up this person who I've never spoken to before, who was the head of our firm, and said, hey, here are my ideas. Here are my interests, because I had done the work and I had decided these are things I wanted to do. I wanted to keep working for a law firm. I just didn't want to be practicing attorney. I just wanted to be on the administrative side. And so I called him up. I volunteered. And he's like, great, let's make it happen. Which was another lesson I learned, that if you don't ask, the answer will always be no. Especially if you sit there quietly and just kind of like torture yourself with ideas instead of going out there and actually making it happen.
Hey, powerhouse. I just want to let you know that I see you. You have multiple to-do lists. You never feel like you're crossing anything off. Overwhelm is constantly swimming in your head. I absolutely relate, and I see you, and I'm here to help you regain your sanity. Introducing the Powerhouse Brain Dump, a better way of getting shit done. You guys, this is a game-changing ebook that is about to revolutionize the way you tackle your tasks. It's not your typical productivity guide. None of us have time for that. But it's a revolutionary approach that I've perfected over time that is going to actually help you break free from overwhelm and reclaim your powerhouse status so you can actually get shit done. So what are you waiting for? Say hello to a more organized and focused you. Grab your copy of the Powerhouse Brain Dump, a better way of getting shit done today, by clicking on the link in the show notes or go directly to erin.gerner.com to grab your copy. That's incredible. So give our listeners some tips. So help us sum this up. So you just kept going. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Even though I love that you're like, I kept going back, but you knew that you were looking for something. You had yes. your glasses on and you were looking for something. So what are some tips that you can give our listeners, like to sum up your whole experience, how you brought this thing full circle? What can they do if they find themselves yeah. in a similar position of what you've talked about?
Yeah. So one thing I did, which is a very practical tip, I've said this on LinkedIn. I say it to everybody who like emails me or DMs me and is like, I hate being a lawyer. What should I do? And I always tell them, I'm like, I don't have the answer. And guess what? Nobody has the answer but you. So the very first thing I would do is you make a likes, dislikes, and like tolerates list is basically what I called it. So you start a Word document or handwriting if that's more, you know, comfortable for you. Put down every single thing that you like doing. Everything, like everything that you've ever done that you're like, this is fun. I like this. This kind of gets me going. I could do this every day if I had to. Or you say to yourself, I would do this for free. Like even if they don't pay me, but I get to do this, like this is my life. Write all that stuff down. In the other bucket, write everything that you absolutely hate. I mean, hate it. And I would even put things in that you've never done, but you have like very much abstain from doing because you know that you would hate it. So like put those in there. And then have a list somewhere in the middle or below all this that's kind of a tolerate list. Like things that you could do, you don't want to do them daily. You don't want this to become like 80% of your job, but there are things that you can live with. That is, it becomes basically your like blueprint of like, this is kind of my ideal job. Like these are the things that I want to do, I don't want to do, I could do, but not on a daily basis. And you get to sort of create your ideal job. And you would be surprised how like amazing it is to just see everything written down in front of you, because little nuggets will start to appear where you may not have noticed a thread. But once you see it all together, you're like, oh, now it makes sense. Like now I understand why I really hate doing this. And I get really anxious and I procrastinate versus when I get this one assignment, it really lights me up and I love doing it.
That's amazing advice. That's such a good, that is such, so a like, a dislike, and a tolerate. And I think that's really great for us to just be able to give ourselves permission to do that. Just the permission slip of being able to get it internally and put it externally on paper, because it just, it almost validates our feelings. Like, I feel like when we carry these things around, there's almost like shame and guilt around like these things that we really hate doing. So that's why we procrastinate on them. It's like we've shoulded it on ourselves and said, oh, I should be doing that, even though you really hate, you know, there's a reason, there's an emotion tied around that particular act. And when you look closely at it, there's likely an answer. So tell us about the lawyers that you help now in your position. So I know that you've taken all of these skills and you've bottled them up, and now you're able to talk to these young lawyers as they're either transitioning into the firm or out of the firm or whatever it is. And I think that is such an incredible and impactful position to have. So please tell us about the work that you do with these lawyers and the conversations that you have with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I, you know, did that list a few years ago, I realized that I really like working with lawyers. I like the law firm environment. I'm very comfortable working for a law firm. I just did not want to practice law anymore. And so my mind started wondering, like, what other roles are there? And I talked to a ton of people on LinkedIn because I did get more active on LinkedIn. I would just cold email people who had interesting titles and just ask them, like, hey, I just want to learn about your job. Like, I literally have no idea what you do, but I'm interested in it. Can you tell me about it? And people are incredibly gracious. Like almost all of them said yes. They were so helpful to me. And so I realized that professional development for lawyers was like where my heart was. Like, this is what I love the most. And so that's what I do now. And it's amazing. I am basically, I'm not the face of the firm. I don't want to put that much emphasis on what I do, but I am the first person that lawyers talk to when they apply for a firm, right? I do the initial interviews. I also do outreach. I find lawyers myself who I think would be good candidates to work at our firm. I do the initial screening interviews with them, and then I set them up to have further interviews with other lawyers. And then once we hire them, I, again, am their first point of contact. I do their onboarding. Whenever they have any questions about anything and they don't know who to ask, I'm the person that they ask. I also oversee the summer associate programs throughout our five offices, which is really fun for me because, again, I am the person that does those initial on-campus interviews. And then we hire these people and they come in a summer and I meet them in person, which is really fun. So I'm just like a social butterfly. Like, this is my job. I am constantly talking to people. I'm doing tons of interviews. Like, this is just what I do. And it gives me so much energy. Like, I could sit in front of a Zoom screen just like now and interview lawyers all day. And I love it. I mean, I lose my voice, but I love it.
But you know, that is a true heart-centered business person. Yes. When you are serving people from the place you wish you had been served.
Yep.
When you, you are literally the person that you needed your 10 years in practice. And so now you're able to throw the rope back to all of these young attorneys. So I'd love to know, what are some of the common themes that you are having in these conversations with these young attorneys as they're coming into the firm?
Yeah. So what's super interesting is a lot of these, especially the new lawyers that we hire straight out of law school, a lot of them spent at least a year or a significant portion of their law school education remote, which is wild to me. They went to law school on Zoom. They were not on campus. I mean, we hired people like for the summers. We had two summer associates who were at the same law school, same classes. They didn't recognize each other. They got to our office in person and they were like, your name sounds familiar. Did we take all these classes together? Yes, we did. Have we ever met before now? No. So that is a vastly different experience than you and I had, and then many of the other lawyers had. So it's almost like we have to help them like integrate socially. I do see that a lot of them seem to be a lot more shy and a lot more kind of introverted than I think I am. And I think part of that is because, again, they were just on Zoom for so much of law school. So I'm constantly having to sort of encourage them to like, go out, explore the world, talk to people in person, you know, stop emailing everybody, leave your office and go see people, you know. So that's something I'm talking to them a lot. But then a lot of them, like, in some ways, I feel like I'm becoming a Gen Z whisperer, because I love what the Gen Z lawyers are all about. And I completely understand them, because I feel the same. I mean, a lot of them are constantly kind of questioning the system. So, you know, we hire them and we're like, here's how we file things in the state of Florida. And they're like, but why don't we do it better? And, you know, some of us older lawyers are like, I don't know. It's just what we do.
Isn't that like the common theme of life in law?
Yes.
Like, it's just what we do. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense. And you're like, I know, it's archaic. We've been doing it forever. I mean,
yes.
So have y'all been able to improve like processes and systems like based on their feedback?
A little bit. I mean, we haven't, certain things are just, that's how the courts do it. And so there's nothing that you at a law firm can do to tell a judge like, hey, this is stupid. Let's do it differently. because, you know, that wouldn't go well. But I do think that the more that they are becoming a little more senior in their careers, I think the more they'll be able to bring some of these like different mentalities that they have along with them. And I really hope that they can make more of a difference than us millennial lawyers did, because I think millennial lawyers, I think, were kind of the first generation of lawyers who started to be more mindful about how we practice, how we live our lives, how we integrate this very, very demanding job with the life that we want to live. And I think the Gen Z lawyers are taking that even a step further. And they're basically asking, how can this career fit into my life versus how can I squeeze my life into this career and just hope that it works out? So I really love the intentionality that they bring to the legal practice. And, you know, when I'm having conversations with older lawyers who are like, ah, Gen Z lawyers are going to ruin everything, I'm always standing up for the Gen Z lawyers. I'm like, I think they're awesome. And I think they're going to change things for the better. I'm sorry that you don't see the benefit, but like a lot of us do. And their peers are going to reap the rewards of this like very, I think, healthy mindset they have about the law.
It's interesting that you say that. I sense that as well. I sense that with the next generation. And it's interesting that you put it that way. Practice law differently. And I really I'm curious how you feel like that works with this generation of lawyers that have had so much of the beginning of their career online and then may have a hybrid work environment. I'm just curious because I feel like when you were first or second year associate, like you needed to be in the office, like living, breathing, sponging all of the stuff. I mean, even in law school, I can't imagine going law school virtual.
Yeah.
But even just on site in a law firm. So like, how does that work out?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I experienced this too when we were all working from home against our wills because everything was closed during a pandemic. I think a lot of us initially were like, oh, finally, we have freedom. Like we can just do whatever the hell we want. We can work whenever we feel like it. We can wear what we want. And I think in some respects, we did have more freedom. But I think in so many other ways, like work now just is everywhere. It's no longer at the office in this like specific geographic location. It just infiltrates your entire life. And I actually think Gen Z lawyers who are very much wanting this remote or hybrid situation, and us lawyers who are having to live in this hybrid situation just because things have changed, I think we're all having a harder time managing our schedules. I think we are all having a harder time setting boundaries. And all of that, I think, makes us less productive, actually. Like, I honestly think if they did a study of like how much productive work do you get done inside of an office versus how much more productive work you get done at home, I can't imagine that people are more productive at home. They feel like they're more productive because they're like, I'm in my element, I'm comfortable, I don't have to commute. It sounds like it would be more productive, but I think you just let everything sort of live together. You don't compartmentalize your personal things, your personal like administrative life stuff and your work stuff. Everything is just kind of jumbled together. And I think that's where people have a hard time with time management is when they just feel like I have 1 million things to do, some personal, some business, some, you know, whatever. And I just try to fit everything in my one day when I'm at home and you don't end up really getting anything done. So this is my, it's my hypothesis. It's not.
No, and I actually wholeheartedly agree with that. I agree with that because the women that I coach and that are my clients and that I talk to on a daily basis are having this same experience. You're right. I really do feel like it's all so intertwined at this point that it's hard, that we can't compartmentalize at this point. So how do you coach time management? Because I know that this is your zone of genius. So what are your tips for our listeners that you have around time management since we do have this kind of interconnectedness now that we seem to cannot get rid of, especially as women?
I know. Yeah, especially as women. I know. I mean, the thing that I try to coach people the most on is you have to really find your priorities and they cannot be too many. So somebody who's like, here's my list of priorities and there are 10 things. I'm like, nope, you're going to have to get rid of 5. You just have to. I think when you get very clear on the things that you want to accomplish personally, health-wise, in business, whatever, put them all together because we don't live our lives separately, right? So your priorities, your top 5 have to include everything in your life. And the moment that you finalize those priorities and they are the things that you're going to focus on, then the next step is you have to say no to everything that doesn't fit in those priorities. And that's really hard. And where it's the hardest is when it's something that would have been priority number 6. So it's very high up there on the things that you want to do and the things you want to accomplish, but it didn't make the top 5. And those 6, 7, you know, priorities, they can really creep in your life and they're very attractive and you want to kind of like devote some attention to them, but you just really have to say no, which again is really hard for us to do. It's especially hard for women because we are kind of conditioned to like do it all and have it all and be it all. And it's very difficult for us to say no because again, we just feel like we have to say yes to everything. So this setting your priorities is like the number one thing people have to do. And then the second thing I try to coach people on is I literally just wrote a LinkedIn post about this, which like nobody wanted to read. And it got very little engagement, which I think is because people don't want to do it. And that is,
we're like head in the sand, head in the sand.
Yes, that's what it is. It's the head in the sand. Like you have to look at your schedule today. You take a whole week and track every hour of your every day for 7 days and see what you spend your time doing. And people don't want to do that because you realize how much time you spend on stupid shit and on things that don't matter. And you feel like they matter. Like we spend hours on email and email doesn't get anything accomplished ever. Like rarely do you solve anything via email. Rarely. Also, email is not the same as like, if you want to write a book. You can't be writing emails about writing a book. You have to just write the freaking book. Yes. If you want to write like a humongous appellate brief that is like your life's work, you can't be emailing about the brief. You have to just write the brief. So I think people very much want to stay from doing an assessment of how they currently spend their lives because they just don't want to see the truth. But you can't try to change something that you haven't measured and that you don't know like where your time is going. So I see a lot of people who try to like adopt all these new productivity hacks. But it's like you haven't changed anything else about how you currently spend your time. You don't even know how you currently spend your time, but you're trying to adopt 5 new tricks to make you more productive. It just doesn't work.
That's exactly right.
I'm curious
right.
to see like what, yeah, tell me about your, what your experience has been with this too.
Well, and it's the same thing. I mean, I just actually released a brain dump because this is what I have my clients do because you have to get it all out on paper. You have to get it out of your mind and onto the paper to be able to do and take action on things. It's the same way that you get out of overwhelm. It's the same way that you gain clarity. These are the ways that you gain clarity, but you have to take an honest look at things. And that's what's really hard because I think a lot of people will say they do the assessment and then like our typical, you know, five star gold chasers were like, oh, we suck because we didn't do that right. Right.
Yes.
Like we see all this waste of time. And then it's like, we got an F in our assessment and then we don't want to talk about it. You know, we've somehow internally graded ourselves as a failure and we do nothing, which is not a healthy behavior. It's just ripping off and taking an honest look, because once you take that honest look, then you can take action from that point in a positive manner. But if nothing changes, nothing changes. It's my favorite thing. It's so simple and cliche, but if nothing changes, nothing changes. You cannot expect to wake up and be excited about your life if you are not taking action every day to make sure that that happens, that you've aligned your values and priorities with what you're doing, you're setting appropriate value, you know, boundaries and enforcing them, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And my other favorite saying, which I love, if nothing changes, nothing changes. It's so true. But the saying that I read like many years ago that always comes up for me is how you spend your days is how you spend your years. And it's so true. Like the things that you do every single day that feel like small, insignificant little habits. We all sit on social media. We all watch TV. We do whatever. We drink. Like they seem very small and like they don't matter, but over the course of your lifespan, that's how you spend years and years and years. And it's, to me, we have an unbelievable amount of agency to change that. Like you don't have to sit on social media every single day. You literally don't. Like this is a choice you're making. You don't have to like sit on a couch for 3 hours a day because you're exhausted and all you can do is watch TV. That is a choice you're making. And I get it. It's the comfortable choice. It's a choice that you've been making for many, many days. And so it just seems like this is it. But if you really think about it, like, are you really saying to yourself as a lawyer, somebody who like accomplished a lot, you went to law school, that you don't have any agency over how you spend a day? Like, is that really the truth for you? It just isn't. But you have to, first, you have to just question it and be like, hold on, is this my life? Is this how I'm spending my days? And then you can move forward and take steps to change that.
Yeah. Awareness is a superpower, and get yourself into community with other people. And that will open your eyes up to a different perspective faster than you can for hours a day. You can just make yourself a community yes. and those women will remind you who the hell you are, what you are capable of yes. and get you going. So tell us yeah. about the clients that you serve through your consulting and coaching practice and how we can, and how people, if they would like to work with you, you know, work on their time management, maybe they're young lawyers yes. and they've totally resonated with a lot that you've said. Tell us about the work you do.
Yeah. So I have an 8-week program where I coach lawyers at really various stages in their careers on having more, I call it a personal productivity. So I'm not trying to get people to like take on more things and add more stuff to their plate and just be busier. I'm trying to get people to find their priorities and become more clear-headed about how they spend their time, which includes your personal time, not just how you live your life at work. So we have an 8-week program, and I work with lawyers at all stages. I still have my full-time job, so I only take a couple of clients at once, which is nice because I get to spend a lot more time with them. I get to know them personally. I know their family's names and stuff like that. So it's been really cool. It's a new business for me. So I'm not somebody who has coached a million people at this point, but it's a fun learning opportunity for me. And I'm constantly fine-tuning all these ideas that I have about productivity from the clients I work with.
Well, that's exactly right, because your everyday life is, do you hear my, we have a new puppy yep. who has decided that he wants to all of a sudden be awake and play in the background right now.
What kind of puppy is it?
He's a mini golden doodle. And we have an 11 and a half year old lady, and she is uh-huh. so not interested in this dog. Like, she wants nothing to do with him. That should be our Legally Blonde moment of the segment. Oh,
well, okay, my Legally Blonde moment does have to do with my dog. So,
oh, well, that's great. Well, just totally segue into the Legally Blonde moment. But to even go back, it is building this coaching business, and what you are doing is so impactful because you are using all of your years of experience and everything yes. that you have walked through and throwing the rope back for younger attorneys. That's what it's about. Mm-hmm. And for you to be the first person that they talk to at this firm, the face that they see, the woman that they come to, like, if I were a baby attorney, I would be so happy to see your smiling, positive face on the other side of a Zoom screen or on the other side of a doorway. To, if I had a question at a law firm, to be like, help me, guide me. Like, I just, you're doing such good work, and you're giving these lawyers permission to actually evaluate their career and build a life and a career that feels good to them. So bravo to you, and bravo to the work that you are doing.
Thank you, friend.
May be young, but it is very impactful. So keep going. And if anybody needs Adriana's help, we'll throw all of her information in the show notes so you can get in talk with her, in touch with her. I'm losing my vocabulary. I don't even know what's going on. It's time for a Legally Blonde moment, y'all. It's gotta be. Yes. Play it on me.
So speaking of dogs, you know how Elle is obsessed with her dog and it's like her baby. So my husband and I don't have kids, but we have a dog, and I love confusing people when they ask me, they're like, so is it just you and your husband? I'm like, oh, we have a 7-year-old. And they're like, is it a boy or a girl? He's a boy. Oh, where does he go to school? Well, we keep him at home for now because he doesn't like puppy class anymore. So I'm essentially talking about my dog. I love to just say I have a 7-year-old and people think it's a child. And I'm like, no, it's my dog. His name is Cooper. But just like Elle, yeah, this is me. Like, this is me with my dog. He's like my actual child. So
they're very good practice. They're very good practice. And these babies, yes. like we had two fur babies that were our pre like actual kids. And yeah. I'm telling you what, those OGs become, mm-hmm. they really are your fur babies, and they are a true piece of your heart. I mean, that our dog, Dixie, she's been gone a couple years, but I'm telling you what, like that dog went everywhere with me. She was my mascot. Yes. She's little too. She's a yep. Yorkie poo. It was very Elle Woods. Very Elle Woods.
Yes, very Elle Woods.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for this amazing conversation. I really appreciate your time. And I just know that our audience is going to get so much value out of this conversation. I appreciate you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. I really appreciate you talking to me, and I can't wait to see you at our new little happy hour.
Yes, that's exactly right. Okay. Thank you so much, powerhouses. See you next week. Thank you so much for listening into the Powerhouse Lawyers podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you loved this episode, I would be so honored if you left a review. And because I know you are the type of woman who wants to see other women win, Be sure to share this episode with someone who needs it. By sharing it, you are empowering a fellow sister in the law to know that she is not alone, that there is nothing wrong with her, and that she can build a life and career that she loves. Thank you. See you next week. Hey, Powerhouse. As a dedicated listener to this podcast, I have curated a special place just for you. It's called the Powerhouse Lawyers Facebook group. You can head on over to the show notes, click on the link, and join our community. This Facebook group is for listeners of the show, attorneys, no matter where you are in your practice. Maybe you're a law student, or maybe you're just someone fascinated by the legal profession. This Facebook group is for you. This is a community that is going to engage in discussions on episodes. You'll get special exclusives. There's valuable networking opportunities. I'll be providing some educational content. And above all, you'll get a strong, supportive community and support system. So click on the link in the show notes below to join the Powerhouse Lawyers Facebook community, where community, knowledge, passion, and collaboration thrive. Again, head on over to the show notes to click on the link to join the Facebook group for the Powerhouse Lawyers podcast. Thanks so much. See you guys there.